The Gates of Horn and Ivory, by Francis Rosenfeld. Chapter 10. The Silent Kingdom. Persephone was careful about lifting her torch, to avoid scorching the healthy roots which poked through the vault of the cave, drawn by the sound of the small stream running through it. Plants can hear water from great distances. They are a lot more sophisticated than people know. A delicate root tracery was covering the entire vault, surrounding the larger taproots, which found themselves mimicking stalactites, and growing in thin air, no doubt managing to absorb the water droplets generated by the feisty little brook. She couldn't help imagine what a thicket this place became in the summer, when the root systems expanded to fill the entire cave. She was surprised to realize she never gave any thought to what was happening in Hades while she was gone, how different it was from the lovely winter home, which always welcomed her in pristine and splendid glory. This cave, for instance, and many others like it, had to be impracticable in summer, if she were to extrapolate from the level of the stream, whose high water mark she could see on the walls of the cave. The water levels looked like abstract murals, with layer upon layer of ochre and sienna, white and sky blue. The top level was very close to the ceiling. Persephone was a homebody who liked stability and routine. She loved spending time at home, in a familiar environment, with Hades, in a place where everything was comfortable and safe and turned on her wishes. Going back into the world was always an effort for her. There was no place to lay her head in the world of the living. She didn't feel at home in Olympus, which felt cold and intrusive, and even if she did manage to acclimate herself, she never spent more than 2 days in a row in one place, be it on Olympus or on Earth. Every time she went back to the world of the living was like going on tour, from city to city and from festivity to festivity, always surrounded by crowds, always having to put up a public persona, which her mother never found satisfying. She had never considered, while enjoying the bounty of flowers and fruit which followed her into the world, that when she looked at all those plants she loved so much, as beautiful as they were, she only saw half of them. The other half was here, quietly hidden underground, their roots, which were listening to its waters, sending messages to each other, feeling their way back to growing upright. An entire kingdom bridged the distance between the earth and the heavens, getting pulled in both directions at the same time. The Ametrine cave Hades had made for her, to surprise her upon her return, was now overgrown with roots, which were slowly grinding its crystals to release their nutrients. Whatever medium plants found, rocks, shells, their own faded bodies, and of course, bones, they turned it into soil and fed on it, like a giant collective device for repurposing matter, which turned dirt and waste into bounty, and nobody ever gave them a second thought. They overtook abandoned structures in mere months, methodically wearing them down with inexorable determination, like water, tumbling down fortifications and mighty palaces in ways any sacking army would have found humbling, and when left to their own devices, they took over the world. There were hardly any places where at least a few members of this mighty kingdom wouldn't grow, from the arid deserts to the Hyperborean frozen plains, and from swamps and deltas to the tops of the mountains. Up there, looking down at the clouds, growing sideways from vertical walls of stone, their indomitable roots digging through bare rock, their lives perennially restored by their yearly vegetation cycles, they were more powerful than the gods. She resented the Lethe sometimes, for taking away people's memories, preventing them from remembering that life is an endless cycle, and hiding from them the larger picture of decay and renewal, one in which the plants instinctively engaged, sensing they were functionally immortal. A plant fated to live for just one season came back from seeds the next year, recreating itself like the phoenix from its own ashes, and brought with it more of itself. Entire colonies grew from one feeble stem, which perished and was turned into sustenance by the first breath of Boreas. She could remember clumps of annual wildflowers which had grown in the same place for decades, sometimes centuries, moving ever so slowly through the landscape and evolving with the passing of time, to invent for themselves new colors, scents, or ways to fend off predators. Persephone knew Hades had neither the time nor the inclination to inspect these conquered territories, inside which the plants expanded their greedy roots, untamed and creating thickets one couldn't cut through with an axe. In her absence, her obedient subjects ran amok, with no rules other than their drive to survive. While she was out there, moving from place to place like a tumbleweed pushed by outside factors into the four winds, they consolidated their claim over territory, filling every dark crevice of Hades with roots, expanding as far as they could reach, always listening to the call of water. She looked up and recognized the white filaments of barley roots, and was gratified by their size and vigor, which portended a bountiful harvest, even as their tender shoots were still months away from breaking through the soil. It wasn't one's day-to-day experience to see the world from underneath, and plants for what they were, its mighty conquerors. It was a perspective that painted everything in a completely different light. What a comfort it was to know that in a place that always changed decors to play out the same dramas, and where tired ideas and beliefs were brushed off, spruced up, and presented as new, she could expect the green shoots of barley to look consistently the same every spring, the one small detail that looked familiar enough to make her feel at home. Persephone sighed and took the long way back to the palace, meandering through the gardens, taking in the sight of every tree and flower, as if she wanted to make sure they'll stay vivid in her memory. "You are sad," Hades noticed. "I don't want to go. I can get no peace up there. Everybody is always driven by something, moving something, wanting something. Nobody can just be." She turned to Hades, curious. "What happens around here while I'm gone?"
"Same old," Hades frowned.
He didn't want to tell her what happened to the underworld during the summer was the same thing that happened to the world above when she wasn't in it. Both worlds were cold and dead without Persephone. The realm of the dead most of all. He returned the question. "What do you do when you're not here?"
"They keep me busy all the time. My mother drives my schedule to the second. Every moment is a joyful celebration."
She didn't want to tell him she counted the days until she could come back, because there was no solid reality for her out there, no place of safety, no coherence, no fixed point to get her bearings. She was roaming the world without shelter or compass, exposed to the winds, churning endless variations of the same old routine, none more effective or impactful than the other. Same story, different dramas, whose ever-changing actors were never satisfied with their new decors. She figured after she had heard the same requests and listened to the same aspirations and fears for centuries, she should have answers to most of them by now, and felt bad that she didn't. Nobody, not even the gods, had figured out how to do away with war, famine, disease, or death. Every problem they thought solved returned with bewildering resilience, and no matter how much abundance Demeter's horn of plenty spilled into the world, it never seemed to be enough to fix its woes. New souls were born every day already chained to the yoke of fate, and unaware of it, and Persephone couldn't tell which was worse, to have your fate already written before you were even born or not knowing that to be the fact. Desire, ambition, pride, greed, lust, love, hate, the major drivers of humanity, ran the show, as they had for millennia, refurbished to fit the current zeitgeist, but essentially the same. The wheel of life and death was always turning. "Life is change," Hades comforted her. "And that is a good thing because nobody said it was good or bad. It's just a description of what is." The crystal cave was overgrown with roots, she teared up. "I know," he laughed at her discovery. "I have to send teams to clean up the caves before you come back every year. Did you think everything stayed just the way you left it all on its own?"
"I was kind of hoping," she smiled through the tears. "I need one place in this universe where the ground doesn't constantly shift under my feet."
"Well, I'll just have to make sure it keeps looking that way, then." Persephone had picked a pretty ametrine pebble from the cave, before the roots endeavored to grind everything into oblivion, to make for herself a little fixed point in this tumbleweed reality, where everything moved constantly and without any other purpose than to keep the engine of being running. She was looking for ways to prepare herself for another batch of dreams, faith and feelings, another collection of unbridled ambitions, lofty goals and dashed hopes which, invariably, ended up here, washed up in the waters of the Lethe and rebranded new. "This time will be different," Hades embellished the truth, trying to make her feel better. "It always is, darling. It always is."